We are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative and just plain right. Just saving the world one soundbite at a time. Hey, a couple of quick texts and I'm going to go to the phones too. Gary H. just came in and said, great win, Army. Oh, yeah. Army, Navy. Butters, how you feeling? Army, Navy. Do you care?
I didn't see any of that game. I saw a few posts on Facebook. So
apparently it went well as far as us Army people think.
Did the president go?
I don't even have the answer to that question. Would he have known if he was there? Anyway, next question. Brian from Huntsville says, so Bob Hope, Bing Crosby, Danny Kaye, and Jimmy Stewart were all dodging pianos from the sky. Maybe. Could have been. John from Huntsville says, Phil, nice monologue. Welcome back to Right Side Radio. I was gone for one day, John. He says, also, I wanted to say I really enjoyed Friday's episode, especially the part when Boomer decided to make a surprise studio appearance. I know. Yeah, so Boom Shakalaka, he texted me and said, man, I came by to see you, and you're not there. And so, anyway, yep, I hope he'll do that more often. I got a call on line one. Let me grab it real quick. That is Allie from Athens. Hey, Allie, how you doing?
I'm good, except you got me crying, Colonel. All you have to do is talk about morale, welfare, and recreation, and the tears start. And I will tell you that we experienced the power of music in Iraq. I got to teach guitar lessons to Joes and to some of the Ugandans. I had the great privilege of leading worship in Saddam's birthday palace. And we would do concerts and karaoke, and I know for an absolute fact that music is one of the best things that boosts morale.
Yeah.
And the other thing is pink socks, and I will explain.
Pink socks.
I made pink socks, S-O-C-K-S. I made a point of, as often as possible, wearing a brightly colored Hawaiian shirt with my khakis and socks that would match the shirt. And as soon as I got to Saddam's hunting lodge, I would take my shoes off just so the Joes could feel like their mom was there and they were at home. And one day, and I'm going to start making, there was a kid who was mustering out, and he walked all the way across the two south in full battle run when probably about 120 degrees weather, had his camelback water thing on his in his backpack, and he walked all the way across camp to thank me for bringing home there.
Yeah.
And I will never forget it. I will never forget it. That is why I would go back in a heartbeat if I was post you, you know?
Well, and I imagine, though, as much as you won't forget it, that they would say the same thing about you, my friend, that they would never, ever forget that you were there.
It was amazing. So here's the question. Are you writing about this time, or am I writing about this time?
I don't know yet. I usually kind of get towards the end of the week, and I decide what my written op-ed's going to be. So stand by, lady. I'll let you know.
Well, sir, you're going to have to decide quickly, because we go to print on Wednesday. So step it up, Colonel.
All right, Allie, have a great day. Appreciate you.
You too, sir. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Real quick, for the break, too, I'll just tell you, JT from Lacey Springs says, thinking of the Ann Murray song, we can all use a good little good news today. Oh, yeah, absolutely. By the way, if you're not familiar, Allie calls in once in a while, and she's got great stories, amazing stories, really. If you're not familiar, you can go look at the Right Side Radio website, right? Rightsideradio.org. Look at the recommended reading list. There's all these books that I have felt like were kind of above the norm for me personally. Like I'm looking at this as being a book that I think I would recommend to somebody else. One of those books on that list is Allie's book. All right. It's called Ballad for Baghdad by Allie Turner. And it literally talks. In fact, the byline of the book is an ex-hippie chick, Vietnam War protesters, 3 years in Iraq. She spent 3 years over there helping serve the troops. If you want a good read from somebody whose voice you hear once in a while, check it out. Ballad for Baghdad by Allie Turner. And she did not ask me to do that, by the way. There's no paid endorsement here. But I'm just telling you, she's somebody who I've gotten to appreciate greatly, and even more so when I realized that she was in places where I was and didn't have to be. She chose to go. All right, listen, we're going to come back here in a minute. We're going to pick up this conversation with John Bargonier. He's the president and CEO of Manufacturer Alabama. They're an organization that does lobbying and association work on behalf of the manufacturing sector throughout the state. And we got a bit of an issue, all right? We have the best unemployment rate and yet one of the worst labor force participation rates. What can we do for workforce development? How can we up the game? Well, the folks who care are the ones who need the people, and that'd be Manufacturer Alabama. So we'll talk to him here momentarily. Y'all stay tuned. We will be right back. Hey, all you right side ruffians out there, you are listening to Right Side Radio, solid conservative, just plain right. We are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid conservative and just plain right, just covering down on some major ground across the northern half of the most beautiful state in the nation. This one right here, Alabama. Y'all, I mean, this show goes like way down south of Birmingham and up north of Huntsville and Tuscaloosa, back to Gadsden, parts of Georgia, Tennessee, and even Mississippi, all thrown in just for good measure. Well, you know, one of the joys of my job, by the way, like this morning, I got a chance to be with somebody that I had served with in the Senate. And then I still see people. But one of the joys of this job right here on the radio, like one of the side perks, I guess, is that I get a chance to interact with people that I used to like work with on a daily basis in my legislative days. But I don't have to wear a coat and tie all the time. So that being said, I am really pleased to bring on somebody who thoroughly enjoyed working with in the past. John Bargonier is now currently the president and CEO of Manufacturer Alabama. And he's been there in this position since November 2023, but he's actually been at Manufacturer now for the last several years as their COO prior to that. He was also the executive director before that of the American Office of the Alabama Office of the American Petroleum Institute, lobbying on behalf of the oil and gas industry, which is fitting since I'm doing a section on the Green New Steel today. He also spent 12 years working for the state, six of which was serving in the governor's office, which is where I spent a lot of time interacting with him, aside from a few other things we did. And during that time, by the way, he was a legislative liaison. He was a deputy chief of staff. Ultimately, he was chief of staff to the governor. And he's been a consultant, 5 years also in the state's finance department. I mean, the guy knows where all the bones are buried. He's also, by the way, he's conflicted because he has a degree from the University of Alabama and an MBA from Auburn. But he's got a wife and some great kids to keep him in line. John Bargonier, how you doing, man?
Good afternoon. I'm doing great, Senator. Which you'll always be Senator to me, by the way. So
I'm just a guy with a microphone who gets to yell at senators.
Well,
now
you are. That's a good good lifestyle. I'll give it to you.
But I'm enjoying this gig. But I meant what I said. It's good to run into folks that I used to see all the time. Yeah. You and I, you reminded me before the show, too. You and I actually first met before you were at the governor's office when we were looking at downsizing government. And you were one of the ones consulting and putting together to help the plans to literally streamline some Alabama government back then.
Yeah, you had been elected in 2010,
right.
Correct? And
right.
So I think around that time, that was when the big Republican wave kind of hit in the state legislature in Alabama.
Right.
A guy named Del Marsh, former Senate pro tem, he comes in to lead the efforts in the Senate, and he charged a lot of you guys, new members, with some projects to find ways to eliminate duplication in state government and increase efficiencies. And so I happened to be on the consulting end working with the state on that. And I think you and I worked on some projects around information technology.
We did, yeah.
And streamlining a lot of that. And we took on healthcare issues and law enforcement and, you know, a lot of different areas of state government. It was great training ground. I'd like to think that we left the state better than we found it.
I believe that.
Yeah.
In fact, I mean, you know, it's one of those interesting, this is a sidebar, total sidebar here, but when I was leaving office in 2018, I just, you know, Charlene and I prayed about it and thought, you know, I've been supporting Trip Pittman with our term limits bills, you know, every year. He's a former senator. 8 years, that's where we're going to stop. So, you know, I got out at 8 years, but I was talking to a reporter and he said, "Senator, why are you leaving?" Like it was unheard of to just go ahead and say, "I'm not going to stay by choice." And I said, "Well, because everything I ran on has been done." And that's a big part of that was what you and I were working on was the streamlining and the mm-hmm. efficiencies that were not there. And there's still so much room for improvement right now.
Sure.
But Lord, we found some places where it was just massive redundancy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was good effort.
It was good stuff. So you're with Manufacture Alabama right now.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to get into the labor force and the workforce development, all that in a minute. But so Manufacture Alabama, what do y'all do? Who do you cater to? How do you do your work? Talk about that for a minute.
Sure. And I'll give you a little quick history. So Manufacture Alabama was established in the mid-90s, 1996. My predecessor, George Clark, started this organization as a traditional trade association that represents, advocates on behalf of the manufacturing industry in the state, which has exploded since 1996,
oh, yeah.
Right? And we're very blessed in the state to have a variety of industry sectors. But it started off as the Alabama Industries and Manufacturing Association and ultimately evolved under the leadership of George and the board into what is now Manufacture Alabama. We have two types of memberships. It's kind of like any other trade association. It's like almost like a club, right? You have the manufacturing companies that are members. They're the ones in Alabama with a presence who are operating and manufacturing something, making something. And then we also have partner members who are companies that may do business with the manufacturing industry. They may be suppliers, consultants, you know, legal support, staffing support, those types of agencies and companies as well. And, you know, I look at us as like a three-legged stool in terms of the focus. One, government affairs, government relations. We have a business-friendly environment in Alabama. There's no doubt about it.
But yeah, one of the best.
We're blessed in that regard, but we don't take that for granted. Policymakers and lawmakers still have to hear from us about impacts of legislation on business and industry. So that's one area of focus. Another area of focus is providing what I would call best practices type resources to our members. So if you think about a manufacturing company, it's like any other business. You have people in charge of HR, communications, finance, safety and environmental. That's a huge aspect of a manufacturing facility. All these different individuals. And so we have committee structures where an individual who does HR in one company can meet regularly with other HR professionals in manufacturing.
Oh, yeah.
And learn about, you know,
best
what's coming down from DC, you know, the health and safety folks, what's coming down from OSHA, the environmental folks, what's the latest from EPA or ADEM. And so we try to create a feedback loop and a best practices opportunity, a table where they can come and learn how to do their jobs more effectively. So that's the second. And then the third is networking opportunities. We want our members to get to know each other. We feel like at the end of the day, we have a stronger industry when we're all on the same page. And we have a great association. Our members are amazing, but we're always working in concert. We're always heading in the same direction together. And that's a blessing because we're able to pivot quickly. We're able to react to issues that come up, whether good or bad. And we'll get into certain challenges here along the way in this conversation. But those are kind of the three prongs of what we do, among many others. But, you know, at the end of the day, we're here to support and advocate on behalf of manufacturing.
So you guys see the gamut. I mean, we have all kinds of manufacturing in the state of Alabama. A lot of folks don't realize. You mentioned a minute ago that it's exploded since 1996 when your association was formed. But the reality is Alabama is known as a, I grew up And my granddaddy was a steel worker, and we used to be the Pittsburgh of the South. Well, that those days are fairly gone in that sector of manufacturing, but the automotive industry is huge here in tier one and tier two levels, even tier threes. And then what are some of the other major sectors of manufacturing, the boat building or shipbuilding industry down in the ports? What else we got?
Yeah, automotive is number one. Yeah. The second is still the steel and iron industry, the metals industry. We have chemical. We have a large chemical presence in the state, both up in the Decatur area, as well as down in the Mobile, north of Mobile area. Aerospace is booming, as well as defense around the Redstone Arsenal and Madison Huntsville area. You have all those defense companies. And I would lump in Austal into that, which is the shipbuilding company down in Mobile at the port. We also have Airbus, who's building some of the world's best passenger airplanes down in the Mobile area as well. I mean, it runs the gamut in terms of what we have in this state. And what I like to tell people when I'm talking about manufacturing, I truly believe this, it is representative of some of the best of what this state has to offer, because it represents 275,000 hardworking men and women, over a $40 billion economic impact each year, more than 20% of our state's GDP. Last year alone, the manufactured goods made up for more than $26 billion in exports, which was a record year. And so there's so much going on and so much positive. Alabama, again, being a business-friendly state, having that reputation, keeping groups like ours, keeping that focus and keeping us in line with that business-friendly expectation, we've been able to see more and more economic development come our way. You see companies leaving states like California and New York, right? They're looking at states like Alabama. The Alabama Department of Commerce, Greg Canfield's been there 12 years. I know you know Greg well, and he's leaving at the end of this year. Under his leadership and many other governors' leaderships and with the leadership of the private sector involved, I mean, this state has figured out how to do economic development. And what we do is we try to support those companies when they get here. To provide resources and to provide advocacy efforts as well.
Well, we do have, and we're going to take a break here in a moment, but we do have some, there are a few things that make, and listen, folks, I'm just telling you, this is why you need to know what's happening in your own state. We talk about stuff on the national level all the time and all that, but you have no idea sometimes what we've already got in place that makes us a gainful opportunity for folks who are looking to relocate or, for that matter, expand an existing business right here in the state. It's not just a matter of legislation. Sometimes it's things like we have something called ATN, another thing called the AIDT, both of which are designed to help train. Like if you bring your workforce to the state of Alabama, they'll provide you with training opportunities to get the workforce ready for whatever it is you're planning to manufacture. Sure. I'm sure you guys interact with AIDT and ATN all the time,
they're
right?
They're crucial partners for what we do. Absolutely. And AIDT is really there when a business comes to the state and helps them get their workforce prepared, right? And ATN is there as a backstop, a backbone to help with businesses that are trying to recruit. They've been here for a while. They're trying to recruit employees. They're looking at, trying to find ways to create rapid credentialing, rapid training, just get people the basics so that they are hireable.
Yeah.
And I can get into that too.
We will. I spent 8 years in the Senate. There were things I learned that I'm thinking, why didn't I know this before? And that's why we're having this conversation, because there's thousands of listeners out there right now that have no idea ATN, the Alabama Technology Network, is actually doing things to help get workforces ready for new openings or expansions in existing plants or whatever the case may be. And then AIDT stands for?
Alabama Industrial Training.
That's right.
Yeah. Industrial Development Training.
Yeah. And Ed Castile still runs that?
Ed runs that. Yeah. They're an arm of the Alabama Department of Commerce, which makes total sense.
Well, it's they do a lot of collaborative work with the two-year college system. That's where you can find a lot of their outposts, so to speak, for ATN and the others. Listen, we're going to take a break right now, but we're with Jonathan Bargonier, President and CEO of Manufacture Alabama. So we're going to get into this next. Like, hey, you want a job? Jobs are out there. It's a matter of wanting it. Well, apparently we have a problem with people wanting it right now in Alabama. And we're going to talk about labor force participation and how we can encourage people back into that sector with workforce development. Y'all stand by. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. We'll be right back. We are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid, conservative, and just plain right. Making common sense like a superpower. All right, we're here in studio right now with John Barganier, who is the president and CEO of an organization called Manufacture Alabama. They're basically an association that focuses primarily on, you might guess, the manufacturing industry. So here's a couple of things from some stats. I got a piece from AL.com. Hold your breath. Here we go. Just so you know, Alabama has one of the best unemployment rates in the nation. We're down to 2.2%. That's like a record. However, labor force participation rate is a different category altogether. And labor force participation rate is a measurement of like how many folks 16 and older are in the workforce actively seeking the opportunity to be employed. 57.4%. That's one of the lowest in the country. Lowest in the country. This particular article says that we are at 57.4%, which puts us behind West Virginia and Mississippi. Back in the 90s, when you said earlier, John, that 97 here, so you said Manufacture Alabama was founded in 96, I think. Mm-hmm. So in 97, Alabama's labor force participation rate was 65%. Mm-hmm. So we have dropped significantly, even though you and I both know that the manufacturing sector, among others, like agribusiness and others, have actually grown in Alabama. But dadgummit, post-pandemic, we're still seeing people not fully coming back to the workforce. You got some stats there. What hindrances are you seeing right now?
Oh, man, this is a big one. It's the single biggest challenge that any real business has in the state.
And
finding people. I mean, we still see help wanted signs. We know what the situation is like in retail and at restaurants and fast food. And, I hear about this from the folks that represent small businesses across the state. It's their biggest challenge, but we hear about it too. And, I mean, we've always talked about workforce development in this state and creating pipelines for individuals to come out of school, whether that's high school, trade school, 4-year, with an opportunity. There have never been more opportunities than there are now. They're just not being filled. And you mentioned 57%. What I like to do to emphasize that is flip that on its head and say 43%. Okay, 43% of the working age population in this state are not looking for jobs, or they may have a barrier to get a job. And we can get into some of that. But that is a very, very significant number. And I think a lot of what we saw, the tidal wave of all sorts of assistance and things of that nature that came along with COVID, and then also the aging population of our workforce. I don't think we should throw that away. I mean, we've seen an exodus of the baby boomer population beginning. It started really just before COVID. Then it blew. It took off during that period of time. They said, "All right, I'm going home. Trying to the next chapter of my life." And then the upcoming generation, it's just a numbers issue. We don't have as many workers in the new generation to offset the number of workers leaving, right? I think we always knew at some point that might happen. So I think we have a lot of different things going on. The workforce challenges are unique too, in that I've heard, and I had a conversation the other day with someone with a very large manufacturing company here in the state, talking about how the workforce, not only hiring and retaining, but the individuals they hire, it's never been more unique than it is now.
Really?
In terms of their knowledge base, soft skills training, if you will, understanding how to communicate appropriately in the workplace. Coming back to work every day, passing drug tests, the, you know, our, obviously the jobs on the factory floor, you know, if you will, are technical. And he was saying that, that there are a number of employees, when they come in, they've never changed a car tire, a bike chain, a car, car filter. They don't have the basics of even that. So now we spend a lot of our time in the industry training up the newest employees on just the foundational aspects of what they're going to do on the day-to-day job.
Well, and I think we see that across the board. Military recruiting is down. There's a lot of things you can blame it on, but one of the things that is definitely there is that we have a change in who is in the eligible pool of recruits because they don't have the same level of fitness or they don't have the same level of, you know, they're all thumbs, if you will, kind of like what you were describing. They've never done the mechanical things growing up. It's been far more of a technical or a online kind of skill set, those soft skills you talked about. But nonetheless, I mean, there are still folks out there. But you mentioned something. COVID happened, and I know we're about to go to a break, but COVID happened, and a lot of people, a lot of legacy knowledge in the manufacturing sectors and in others, dropped their papers and retired and went to the house. Getting those next folks in, the same ones you and I were just talking about, the next generation of folks to keep the manufacturing sector going, they can't work remotely. They got to come in and do the job. We'll talk about some of the barriers when we get back. We got to remove some barriers is what it boils down to.
Right? Absolutely. All right. Yes, sir.
We're with John Bargonier, President and CEO of Manufacturer Alabama. You want a job, folks? I'm just telling you. You want a job? They're out there. You can get trained up for it. They will take care of you. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. We'll be right back.
To Right Side Radio with Phil Williams. It's hard to go wrong when you're on the right side. Right Side Radio, solid, conservative, and just plain right.
Alabama's syndicated news talk leader, Right Side Radio. Phil Williams here live in the Right Side Studios. Man, we got the local, the state, the national, sometimes the international. And yeah, we cover down on all of it, like the dude just said. Solid conservative and just plain right. Well, we're back in this conversation right now. This is, by the way, this is a conversation that's near and dear to my heart. I mean, I don't know if all of y'all care about it the way I do, but I'll be honest. In my time in the Alabama legislature, one of my prime focuses became economic development. It was something that I was passionate about, the idea of bringing jobs to the state, of growing jobs in the state, of keeping jobs in the state. And then as a result of that, my very first committee that I chaired was the Committee on Fiscal Responsibility, but I was able to grow that committee with Senator Marsh's assistance. It became known as FRED. It was a nickname, FRED, which stood for Fiscal Responsibility and Economic Development. And it became one of the biggest committees in the Alabama State Senate. We saw a lot of economic development and workforce issues that came through there. And that was my passion. So when I'm sitting up here, you know, running this show, the things that I'm passionate about still come out, one of which is meeting right now with my friend John Bargonier from Manufacturer Alabama. So John, we got an issue for those who may just be tuning in. We got a great unemployment rate, but we got a sorry labor force participation rate. Mm-hmm. You and I just kind of ran down some things a little while ago in the first segment. But so you guys in the manufacturing sector at Manufacturer Alabama, what do you see as like true impediments that keep people from coming? I mean, we know they're not coming back to work because our participation rate sucks. But what are the things that are keeping them from coming back?
And let me start by saying this, so it's even more sobering. The average annual salary in manufacturing in our state in Alabama is $82,500 a year.
Come on.
That is That's a fact. You can look it up.
Okay? Why did I go to law school?
Our average salary just across the board, across all business in this state and all workforce is $67,000. So we're well above that state average. So these are good paying jobs. They are incredible career opportunities, a lot of upward mobility, and a lot of training opportunity along the way as well. They'll take you. I mean, you need to pass a drug test and show up to work. They'll train you, and you come to work every day and work hard. The sky's the limit in this industry. I truly believe that. You mentioned barriers. You already kind of alluded to one that I'll just mention real quick about flexibility. You said that as we're going to the commercial.
Okay.
The flexibility is a real challenge for us because in a lot of different industries, a lot of different sectors, businesses become more and more remote, right? More and more virtual, computer-based. Young folks are now working from their kitchen table.
You can't build a car from your kitchen table.
You can't build a car. You can't build a cast iron pipe. You can't develop chemicals. You can't build an airplane without being on the factory line, right?
Right.
So that's a huge hurdle for us to overcome. There are certainly office jobs in manufacturing too with more flexibility, but that's a disadvantage at the moment. And I've heard that clearly from folks that work in manufacturing.
You can't do a Zoom call and build a car.
Yeah, you're not going to be building a car from your kitchen table.
Yeah,
there's no way to do that. So. But I always like to mention that. I think that's worth noting as it relates to the disadvantages that we have as an industry, and barriers to finding this next generation of workforce. Another issue that has become a real priority for us is dealing with childcare. All right. So let's talk about this a little bit.
We don't care about your personal life. Get to work.
We're not talking about my child care. Me and my wife, 13 years ago, when we knew we were going to have our first child, the first thing we did was we looked at each other and said, well, you know, we know how much daycare is going to cost in this community. It's close to a mortgage payment. Like, who's going to stay home?
Gosh, yeah.
You know, is it worth it for both of us to work?
Yeah.
And ultimately, I mean, we're blessed we were able to continue to work, but you obviously make sacrifices. I don't know who all out there has looked at the cost of childcare lately, but it's pretty astronomical. And so that has become a real barrier for people looking to actually want to go into the workforce.
Well, and especially post-COVID, when a lot of times they change their kids' schoolings. Sometimes they decided they needed to do something different, or that matter, suddenly the kids were out of school. What do I do now? I can't work. So you had to have an alternative.
Yeah. And so, you know, what we have heard, and I'll tell you a quick background on why in the world a manufacturing association gets involved in childcare. The reason is we were approached by some of our members who were looking at childcare as a real crisis. Like when they talked to job applicants, one of the questions that would come up when they talked about, you know, salary and benefits, time off was, do you offer a childcare option? I need a childcare option.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
And so they even considered as a business building an on-site facility to offer for their employees. And they came back and they were asking me one day, said, you know, do you know of any is there any tax benefits to that? Is there any incentives on the books here in the state that might help us offset some of the cost to get these people employed, but to have a child care option? And we looked around, and Alabama doesn't have anything like that.
Yeah, and which surprises me because I don't know why, but I felt like we had something, but you would know. You're saying we don't right now, right?
And we have the dependent care credit, right?
I guess that's it.
You get a couple thousand per child you have in your household.
Okay.
There's foster credits and other credits for children,
yeah,
but not on the daycare, child care side. And so we started looking at other states. There's over 20 states in the country that have something like this. Just about every one of them around the Southeast have it. And like we do in policy, as you know, if we find good ideas, we don't mind stealing those instead of recreating the wheel.
We call that model legislation.
Model legislation, yeah. So
we're modeling it.
So we looked at, in particular, state of Louisiana. They have a program. It's a lot more robust than what we're proposing, but we took the aspects that we knew worked there. They've been doing this for 10 or 12 years now, and so they have some data that shows with a credit like this, you can influence the labor force participation rate, right? And that's what we're trying to do. It always goes back to that rate. If we can go from 57 to 58%, that's thousands and thousands of new jobs in the state.
It is, but so here's one of the first things. My listeners know this is a fiscally conservative show,
sure.
All right? So You and I talked during the break briefly. I want to make sure that we say right up front, we're not talking about subsidized government, you know, health care, child care.
Sure.
We're not putting together a dependency state. You're talking about an incentive opportunity.
This is an incentive that ultimately can also help pay for itself over time. So the way it works is a business, and it's not a mandate on any business, a business could decide under, if our legislation, which we're introducing this coming session, would pass, a business could decide to offer a child care benefit to their employees who need that. That could be in the form of a number of ways, but the way that it's typically used is through just a basic stipend to their employee. Just like they'd offer an HSA or health care, they could offer a benefit of some sort of financial amount to the employee, and then the employee could use that. It has to be, it's earmarked, it's managed, right, like an HSA. They could use that in their community with the child care provider that is best for their child and their family. And then at the end of the tax year, the business can then turn in for a tax credit against the amount of resources they spent on their employees' child care. Our bill has a one-to-one dollar ratio to it, right?
Yeah.
The legislature will probably look at that differently and decide exactly what kind of impact that would be to the education budget. But at the end of the day, if you think about it this way, if we're trying to incentivize this new generation to come to work, and this isn't a manufacturing bill, it's a business bill. It's for all business, small, medium, large. There's no limit on how many employees you have. If we're trying to find a way to get all these folks back into the workforce, I think we have to look outside the box and look at something different that is an investment, but also with every new hire, you're getting new payroll tax back into the system too, right?
See
how that works?
Yeah, so you're increasing productivity. Right. You're increasing the workforce potentially. And I can tell you too, there's going to be a couple of things that are going to come up. Are there going to be, since it's a tax credit from the state and you have to claim it after the fact, so to speak, is there going to be any prohibition against where it was used? Are they going to require some kind of a ban on Christian daycares? Can the church daycare qualify?
Any child care provider, they have to be licensed by DHR, okay? But that is the majority of daycare providers. That can be in-home.
And that already exists.
The Alabama Department of Human Resources. And they have a quality standard, too. So it can be in-home, it can be your for-profit provider, it can be a nonprofit provider, religious. There's no exemption. They just need to be licensed by DHR, Alabama DHR.
And that's going to be one of the things I think people are going to care about is not only is it there and is it available, but is it going to be limited in scope so that I can't ever go to the places that I want to be able to go? There's going to be secular facilities that are like chain organizations like KinderCare that has, you know, chains of different. Then there's going to be the Baptist church on the corner that has a great daycare.
The beauty of the stipend. If the employee's just providing a stipend to you, then as long as you're using that for providing childcare to your employee, it doesn't matter at the end of the day. And again, you got to understand, this is not an incentive for the business. The business isn't getting the tax credit unless they provide a benefit to the employee. So at the end of the day, the beneficiary of this is the employee.
About a minute left here. Are you going to cap it? Is it going to be capped at how much we can have?
Currently, the way our draft legislation is, it's capped at $15 million across the state for all businesses.
Out of the $8 billion, billion with a B dollar education budget, that's a drop in the bucket. But it could bring in exponentially more in, like you said, payroll taxes and everything else.
Well, what we're trying to do is move the needle somewhat on that labor force participation rate, get the help wanted signs out of there, get people on the factory lines, get people into businesses, working, being productive, creating not only an increased tax base, but an increased economic impact, and ultimately make themselves free from any other subsidies or anything, any other support, become independent.
So is that, we're about out of time here for this break, but is that bill coming up in the 2024 session in a few months?
Yes.
Who's going to carry it? Do you know yet?
We've got two, and we have this is a bipartisan effort. We have Senator Garland Gudger from Coleman.
Yeah, he's been on the show.
He's a Republican senator who's going to carry it in the Senate, and Representative Anthony Daniels, who's the House Minority Leader in the House. This is our goal was to make this nonpartisan, about the employee and labor force participation rate.
Well, both those guys have been on this show, and of course, Anthony Daniels is actually running for Congress right now. So, all right, listen, we're going to take a break right now. We'll come back for a final segment with John Bargonier, president and CEO of the association called Manufacture Alabama. Look, we got to get people back to work. How do you do it? You don't subsidize them. You don't mollycoddle them. You don't pay them to stay at home. You find incentives to get them back in the workforce. How do we get people back in the workforce? Right now in Alabama, if you want a job, the jobs are there. We can put you to work tomorrow. But I'm just saying, we need more people to step up and do. And how do we incentivize it? We'll talk more. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid conservative and just plain right. Back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid conservative and just plain right, just making it cool to be a conservative. Hey, listen, we're going to wrap up this conversation with John Bargonier. He's the president and CEO of Manufacture Alabama. They're an association that pretty much represents this huge manufacturing sector we have in the Alabama economy. And y'all, how many billions is the impact to the economy?
Over 40 billion annually.
40 billion annually just to Alabama. That's
just in Alabama.
That is amazing, and I know you guys see it and hear it, and I mean, the economy being what it is, there's been a whole lot of bounce back in manufacturing, nonetheless, and which has been great. I'm sure the supply chains have disruptions have impacted y'all. In fact, I even said to you during the break, knowing what like real time logistics are for an automotive plant or something like that, supply chain disruptions have got to be wreaking havoc at times. But we're seeing a bounce back, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, I think where it really became sobering was during the wonderful period called COVID-19. You know, that whole situation, the pandemic. If you recall, I mean, I went to grocery stores and big box chains, and stuff was just gone.
Gone.
I mean, Clorox was just gone. I mean, things that obviously weren't being manufactured because of some raw material or process that we rely on overseas. Wasn't getting to us, or it was sitting out in shipping containers off the coast of California, right?
Yeah.
You remember those stories.
Oh, yeah.
And so what I'm hopeful and I think is positive that came out of that is there really is a strong movement to onshore more manufacturing back to America, to domestically, and to not rely so much on a global supply chain. I think Alabama is extremely poised to gain some of that.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
Right.
I mean, we have a warm water port, we have rail, we have an interstate system. We're kind of geographically located in the hotbed of growth in the United States.
Yeah,
so
God has blessed us with incredible rivers. I mean, just everything here in the state, and we have wonderful people. You know, we talk about this workforce issue. We got to encourage, and we got to get more people coming out.
Well, and one of the things that you and I were talking about during another break, because apparently we talk a lot during the break, is the bill that Representative Daniel, when you said his name, it reminded me of the bill that he had that he came on the show and talked about this past session. That basically brought tax relief for folks who were willing to work overtime.
Yeah.
So all your overtime wages, the state dropped its income tax off of that portion of your earnings. And first of all, I thought that was genius. But secondly, I was pleased to hear, because and I'll back up and predicate what I'm about to say with this. A lot of folks don't realize that when they hear associations, they think of things like the teachers union. No, you guys are nothing like that. In fact, y'all helped lobby for or advocate for that tax relief bill,
sure,
which I thought was pretty cool.
Yeah, and that was a novel idea that had never been done anywhere else in the country.
By a Democrat.
I fully expect that we will see that same model legislation move its way around a lot of different, at least southern states, this coming year as they go into session. I think Alabama is going to set the tone for that kind of idea. And what I mentioned to you in the break is I see that overtime bill as a real supplement to this workforce shortage. If we don't have enough people coming in to work and fill all the spots, We have to have people, they're working more hours, right? So this just puts more money in their pockets at the end of the day. It incentivizes those that are willing to work overtime to do so and not get taxed by the state. I think it's genius. I will say the legislature, because it's never been done before, the legislature put some parameters around. I think in about a year after it's been implemented, they're going to go back and review it to see how much it cost, how much it was utilized, you know, the warts and all, and do what they do with like our large incentives package, which is renew it, amend it, and things of that nature. But it was great.
Well, listen, John, we're about done here, sure. But I want to say this, in the my listeners can hear it. When I was in Montgomery, I looked sideways at a lot of people as they came down the hallway, and there were some that I would duck in the door when I saw them coming, and because of the things they worked on, the things they stood for. Never with you, brother.
And man, I appreciate it.
I appreciate the service you've had to the state, and I appreciate the fact that every time I've worked with you, it's been on something that didn't ask me to to somehow conflict with my conservative values. So keep doing what you're doing. We appreciate you.
Well, I appreciate the opportunity and be happy to come back anytime.
All right. We'll take you back on Right Side Radio.
All right.
Stay in the fight, bro.
Thank you so much.
All right. We are taking a break right now. The music's already playing. That means the pastor's got to quit talking. So we will be right back. Dipper number two coming up.